Why is deleting the code so important for a code to treat? I already mentioned in episodes 4 and 5 of these podcasts that after each session, the code to treat, we are deleting the code. Today, I will answer why. Hi, my name is Peter Kofler. I am the Code Cop. Obviously, I'm fanatic about clean code, and for many years, I tried hard to develop quality software. Eventually, I had to change my motto to developing quality software developers. In this podcast, I will answer questions about facilitation, hosting, and participation of code-to-treats or any kind of hands-on session in general. If you have any questions regarding your code-to-treat, please send me an email or leave a comment. So David Tanza asked me, why do we delete the code after each session? This is, as I said before, it's a pretty important part of the code retreat idea. So we have a number of sessions, usually 6, and after each session we are deleting the code. And we do that because it's not about finishing, right? We are not in flight mode, there is no deadline, there is no pressure. And this is pretty important because most of us, professional developers, so we are paid to get results, right? We are paid to create some software, and all developers I know are aware of it, that time is money. So we try to be fast, we try to finish quickly, and that sometimes makes us take shortcuts, and so there is always some kind of pressure to finish, and that's not what we want during the code retreat. Because in the code retreat we want to practice, we want to learn, we want to explore, we do want to do stupid things. So in order to fight this idea, it's like this feeling that all of us have, we're deleting the code to make sure it's not about the result. It's not about finishing, right? We also need to slow down. We need to emphasize the practice, focus on what we are doing and not on the outcome. We delete it so everybody sees it's not about the outcome. It doesn't matter. Also, I really like deleting because it helps me focusing on experiment. I had several sessions as participant where the code was really ugly. So we tried some things, it didn't work well, it was horrible. We had some great learnings, but the code was crazy. So I was really happy deleting it. And sometimes I've been saying it in the end, when the timer rings, I'm happy, let's delete this crap. Nobody should see that. That's part also of the code retreat. It's okay to write some weird code. It's okay to do some experiments. That's encouraged. And also another thing is that the next session will be totally different. So it's good to have a clean slate and start over. If we wouldn't delete the code, some people would think of the code and try to move forward and keep it for the next sessions. And I have seen it also in code retreats that some participants didn't delete the code because they want to finish the exercise and they kept it to the next session, but that didn't help them because the next session had a different constraint and then the code was totally useless. So it's a clean slate for the next session. I want to finish this with a quote I took from CyberDojo. CyberDojo is a really great site by John Jagger, which is a topic on its own for another episode, and it's called No Listen. No, listen. Stop trying to go faster. Start trying to go slower. Don't think about finishing. Think about improving. Think about practicing as a team. That's what this day is for. Nothing else. First-time facilitators are often concerned about questions people might ask. So what kind of questions do people ask? And how many do they ask? Are they asking questions all the time? Or what's going on here? It's not that hard. So usually people ask questions shortly after the introduction, like where are the toilets or where is the coffee? It's just some people just don't pay attention. So be prepared that people ask the same questions again and again about the infrastructure, about the day, when is lunch break and so on. That's not a problem. You can answer this question. Other questions are asked regarding constraints, especially from beginners. Not really beginners, but first-time participants, because some constraints are weird or counterintuitive. So people might misunderstand constraints and they will ask if things are allowed concerning a constraint. And so that's probably the most number of questions that I answer during coded reads. And there are some other questions, but they're really rarely. So it happens from time to time that someone would come to me to ask a specific question about usually the constraint, if I think about it during the session. Sometimes if they are allowed to do something regarding the constraint, so that's an easy answer. If the constraint is no conditional and they asked me if a switch statement is conditional, yes it is, so no switch statement. That's easy to answer. Usually it's the opposite, that I ask them if they need help, or when I'm passing them and I see that they're not moving forward, so maybe I'm asking them if they're stuck, if they need help with the setup, or so they're not asking that much. In this situation, sometimes they ask me when I'm looking at their code if something is right or if it's the correct way. These questions don't have to be answered, right? I already talked in episode 4 about how to answer such questions. And short, you don't answer such questions. Final question for the day is from the last facilitation training that I did. And someone was asking, what's about a single person staying alone? So when there is an uneven number of participants, it can happen that a single person is like a leftover. So in the end, there are all the pairs formed, not in the end, but before a session, all pairs are formed and a single person is left over. So what should we do? Sometimes these people want to be on their own, so they didn't care for a pairing partner, and then they have to be reminded that really collaborative work, the pair programming, is part of the coded read. It's how we learn through the coded read. So first I would remind them that they need to pair, because it's a coded read, that's in the day spirit. And they should just join any pair they want. It doesn't matter. They can form a power pair, how I call it, which is a pair of three, which is perfectly fine. Just if there is a pair of three, I usually make sure that the person is included, like it's not someone sitting on the side, but if there are three, it's more important to do the ping pong or to make sure that everybody is contributing, right? If the person has a particular problem with the setup, I would ask all the whole group if a pair is doing like language X, or I don't know, maybe there's someone is a Python beginner, so I would ask the whole group, so who is doing Python? Hopefully a pair is already doing Python, so yeah, there is the pair where you can go as a single participant. Also, there is an option to give participants, like allow them to form a mob. So if there is a mob and it's already a few people, it's easier for a single participant to join. So it's less intrusive maybe. So that's also an option. And Sandra told me on their coded reads, often there have plenty of facilitators, so they have extra facilitators. And if there would be a single person staying alone, one of the facilitators would step in and pair with this remaining participant. That is all for this episode. I'm Peter Kofler and I wish you luck with your next coded read or hands-on workshop. If you have any questions regarding your coded read, please send me an email or leave a comment. I'm looking forward to hear from you how your event went. Coded reads are awesome. Let's have more of them.